Hello friends, I am Pradeep Acharya. This topic is the part of the HPLC in the chapter number 21 from the book Analytical Chemistry written by Gary D. Christians and others. In the previous episode is the chapter number 21, season 1. This episode is the chapter number 21, season 2, and this is the part and continuation from the previous episode, chapter number 21, season 1. Now I'll discuss about the detectors of the HPLC and its generally desirable criteria for HPLC detectors and data acquisition. Low noise and high sensitivity promotes good detection limits and are thus desirable in all detectors. As a single chromatographic run on a complex sample can last a significant time, that means greater than 1 hour, it is highly desirable that the detector baseline does not drift substantially. As column efficiency increases, peaks become narrower and span a smaller range of time. This necessitates that the detector must respond fast and the resulting data must be acquired with a sufficiently fast time resolution. This also requires that the detector cell volume be sufficiently small and of a geometry that the entire passage to and through the cell contributes little to overall band dispersion. If any of these criteria are not met, the acquired chromatogram will display a poorer separation than what was actually achieved at the column exits. As a rule of thumb, to faithfully represent a chromatographic peak, at least 20 digitized measurements must be made across the peak. If the entire peak occurs within 1 second, then the detector response time should be no greater than 50 milliseconds. Quite often, a single response time is quoted for a detector, and it is typically the e-folding time. Note also, the rise time and fall time of a detector signal may not always be the same. At least 3 or more, conservatively 5 e-folding times should be considered the response time. In this example, we are looking then for a detector with an e-folding response time of 10 milliseconds. If the detector output is internally digitized, then data will be directly transmitted to the acquisition system. This is typically the case for present day detectors. In the above example, what we discussed, a minimum data transfer rate of 100 Hz is needed. Detectors used for fast LC measurement today can typically transfer data up to 200 Hz. Other desirable characteristics in an HPLC detector is that it should not be sensitive to small change in flow rate and temperature, and be simple to operate, and be non-destructive with low dispersion, so the other detectors can be serially deployed. A wide linear dynamic range is also a short after detector characteristics, as it makes quantization over a broad range of concentrations easier. In an age of inexpensive data shortage and abundant computational power, if the response slope remains sufficiently high, then this emphasis on linearity is questionable. Indeed, some detector response, as for example most evaporation based detector that rely on forming aerosol particles. So this type of detector's response are inherently non-linear over a large range, and manufacturers frequently incorporate signal processing in the instrument firmware to linearize the output, a process to which the user is blind. In a more enlightened future, this would be transparent to the user, and the user should be able to choose one of the many ways available to utilize a non-linear calibration plot for quantization. Whether a detector selectively responds to certain species or nearly universally responds to all species can be regarded as a blessing or a curse. Universal response may be of interest in a scouting exploratory venture, but if one is interested in a specific compound, as for example a particular impurity of interest in a pharmaceutical sample, a detector with selective response to that analyte will be much better, especially when your analyte peak has a co-eluting interferent, but the detector only responds to the analyte of interest. Short of a mass spectrometer operating in selected ion fragmentation and monitoring mode, then there is no detector that is likely to respond only to a specific analyte. Mass spectrometry and LC-MS we'll discuss in the next chapter, number 22. During the detection in mass spectrometry and LC-MS, the chromatographic separation of the analyte from the matrix is needed, else quantization error will occur from the effect of the matrix on the ionization efficiency of the analyte. Now I'll talk about the universal and quasi-universal detectors. A mass spectrometer and a refractive index detector, that means RI detector, these are both truly universal detectors. A refractive index detector is a bulk property detector. Any change in its composition is reflected in the RI, that means refractive index. The RI detector has two major shortcomings. Point number one, RI, that means refractive index, changes considerably with temperature. As a result, all good RI detectors use a thermostated optical block, and the entrance liquid is thermally equilibrated before it enters the detection cell. This is typically accomplished by embedding a significant length of a narrow bore thermally conductive entrance tubing in the same block. While temperature stabilities of around 0.01 degree centigrade or less are achieved, the entrance tubing does contribute to significant band broadening. Point number 2. RI detection is generally incompatible with gradient elution. Consider that during a solvent gradient, the eluent composition changes at the percent level, changing the refractive index proportionally. In contrast, one may be trying to detect the elution of a solute a few ppm in concentration. This will be akin to detecting the presence of a pebble on a steep hillside from an elevation map. Further, the refractive index may not be a single valued function of the solvent composition. For the commonly used water methanol solvent system, going from pure water to pure methanol, it results in the refractive index as well as the viscosity increasing with methanol addition, reaching a maximum and then decreasing again. Although other designs have been investigated and even been commercialized, the vast majority of HPLC RI detector are based on the differential refractometer. The heart of the differential refractometer is a two-compartmented quartz flow cell, each half of which contains a hollow 45-degree prism with flow-in-out connection. The reference cell is filled with the intended eluent. This generally remains stationary during operation. The column effluent flows through the other cell. Collimated monochromatic light is incident on the reference cell. While it can be shown that the same principles apply to all other angles of incident, presently, for simplicity, we assume a 45-degree angle of incident. The light beam passes through the reference cell and then along the same path through the sample cell when NS is equal to NR. NR is related to the reference cell and NS is related to sample. So, the light beam passes through the reference cell and then along the same path through the sample cell when NS is equal to NR as no refraction occurs and falls on the photodetector. The photodetector consists of two identical adjacent photodiodes, often with a common cathode and two separate anodes. The signal processing circuitry measures the difference in current generated by the two photodiodes. When NS is equal to NR, then equal amount of light falls on the two photodiodes. The PSD, that means position sensitive detector, generates zero signal. Minor offset to achieve zero can be conducted electronically, while the major offset is carried out by translating or rotating the zero glass piece, which can bend the beam. When NS is not equal to NR, then the beam will bend due to refraction and the PSD will generate a finite signal. There are some calculations regarding this in this book. If you are interested, people, please go through this. While RI detectors are in general less sensitive than UV absorbance detector, they have been markedly improved in recent years. In particular, the statements such as RI detector are 1000-fold less sensitive than UV detector have little meaning. Many solutes, as for example carbohydrates, have little or no useful UV absorption. A number of other detectors are in principle universal, but in practice the sensitivity for general applications are so low that they are used only in niche applications. Various polymers are extensively used in present day society. Most synthetic polymers do not constitute a polymer of a given chain length or molecular weight. Rather, they are a mixture of polymers of different molecular weight. The characterization of polymers and the determination of their molecular weight distribution, which is a prime determinant of certain polymer characteristics, and they are most commonly carried out by size exclusion chromatography or ACC. In the SEC analysis, that means size exclusion chromatography analysis of soluble polymers, the use of viscosity detectors are common. In its simplest form, the viscosity of a chromatography effluent can be readily measured by connecting a capillary to the column exist by a T. The back pressure caused by the capillary is given by the Hazen Poiseuille equation. Delta P is equal to 8F nu L by pi R to the power 4, where the delta P is the pressure drop, capital L is the length of the capillary of internal radius small r, F is the flow rate, and nu is the viscosity of the liquid. For a given capillary and at constant flow rate, the pressure drop is therefore a linear measure of the viscosity. What we understand from this equation? Like refractive index, the viscosity is also a strong function of temperature. A single capillary viscosity detector like this, or one using a differential pressure transducer where the differential pressure is brought to zero by pressurizing the other side of the transducer with a static pressure source, it is very inexpensive but rather insensitive. Now I'll talk about the differential viscometers. In a differential viscometer, the distinction between the baseline liquid versus the sample in the same stream is accomplished by incorporating a decay coil. In details, a differential viscometer is configured as in a Wheatstone bridge circuit using four fluidity resistors through which the column effluent flows. With a thermal equilibration coil and a measurement block thermostated to less than equal to 0.01 degree centigrade, the sensitivity of a differential viscometer is comparable to a refractometer in size exclusion chromatography application. In size exclusion chromatography, after a molecular weight versus retention time calibration is established using known molecular weight standards under some given chromatography conditions, a concentration detector, as for example RI detector or similar detector, can provide the molecular weight distribution of a polymer sample. The viscometer, on the other hand, responds more to a higher molecular weight polymer at the same mass concentration and magnifies differences in the higher molecular weight region compared to a refractometer. Further, If an RI and a viscosity detector are used together, both the molecular weight distribution and degree of branching of the polymer can be established. In this context, in conjugation with a concentration detector, that means a low angle laser light scattering detector, in short it is called the LALS, LALS or LALLS. So in conjugation with a common concentration detector, that means LALS detector, that measure light scattering at a small angle and interpret the results in terms of zero angle, that means intrinsic scattering, it can provide both number average molecular weight and weight average molecular weight. Number average molecular weight is denoted by MN, capital M subscript small n, and weight average molecular weight is denoted by MW, capital letter M subscript small letter W. A multi-angle light scattering, in short it is called the MALS, M-A-L-S. This MALS detector is the most powerful in this regard. The generated data can yield the molecular weight and the size, specifically the radius of gyration, denoted by RG, capital letter R, subscript small letter G. And it's sometimes called the root mean square radius, a shape sensitive parameter. And this can be done without reference to any calibration standard. So it is the absolute measurement. A log-log plot of RG versus molecular weight can indicate if the conformation or shape of the molecule changes with molecular weight. An electrical conductivity detector. An electrical conductivity detector, like a refractometer, is a bulk property detector. However, it can be considered a quasi-universal detector in the sense that all dissolved substances are either charged or uncharged. All charged substances, including charged colloids, have a finite electrical mobility in solution. They will move under an electrical field. The charge transported per unit time is electrical current, and the current resulting from a given electrical field is thus a measure of the electrical conductivity of the solution. The electrical mobility mu, also interchangeably it is called the ionic mobility, denoted by the mu 0, or the electrophoretic mobility, mu EP, subscript EP. This is especially used in the context of electrophoresis. So the electrical mobility mu of an ion depends on its charge and its size, and expressed as its Stokes radius, small r. Small r means unit of length, in unit of length. So r is equal to kT by 6 pi nu d, where nu is the viscosity of the solution and capital letter d is the diffusion coefficient of the charged species, with small r not generally applied, for example, to colloids or charged proteins. This equation is referred to as the Stokes-Einstein equation. The ionic mobility, which has units of velocity per unit field strength, m by s by v by m, within third bracket, is equal to m square v to the minus 1 s to the power minus 1. That means the unit is centimeter square, volume v to the power minus 1 and second s to the power minus 1 is also often used. And the electrical mobility mu is equal to dzf by rt, where small letters z being the charge magnitude on the ion, that means plus 1, minus 2, etc. And capital letter F is the Faraday constant. And this equation, one form of the Einstein relation or Einstein-Moluchowski relation. Note that at a constant electrical field, the current will not only depend on how fast the ions are moving, but how many current carriers are there. That is the ionic concentration. The concentration dependence is incorporated in the quantity limiting equivalent conductance lambda 0, where the lambda 0 is equal to mu f. The superscript 0 is mentioned for the conductance of a solution 1 equivalent per liter in concentration. In a measurement cell containing 2 electrodes of unit area and unit distance apart. And it is to indicate that this value is the limiting value reached in very dilute solution. Note that this lambda or lambda 0 already keeps ionic charge into account. Some text denotes lambda on a molar basis. In that case, the charge magnitude dz will also appear in the right side of the equation. Lambda 0 is equal to mu f. In addition, while the lambda has no sign, the mu, especially when used in the electrophoretic context, the mu ep is considered a vector quantity. The mu ep values, that means mu subscript ep, I already described. The mu ep values of cations and anions are respectively positive and negative. At given ion in solution is surrounded by ions of opposite charge. As ionic concentration in a solution increases, this oppositely charged ion atmosphere shields the central ion from fully experiencing the electric field. As a result, Z effectively decreased. As we lower the concentration, then Z and hence also lambda asymptotically reaches a limiting value. This limiting lambda value, which is called the lambda 0, superscript 0, it is also called the equivalent conductance at infinite solution, which one we already know from the physical chemistry. In a 4 electrode conductivity measurement arrangement, a constant current is applied across the outer pair of electrodes and the voltage drop across the inner pair of electrodes is measured. This is directly proportional to the reciprocal of the conductance between the electrodes. Both the above measurements are, however, affected by the capacitance at the electrode solution interface. A bipolar pulse conductance measurement technique is not affected by the presence of capacitance either serially or in parallel to the resistive elements. In this technique, two successive voltage pulses of equal magnitude but opposite polarity are applied to the measurement cell, and the current passing through the cell at the end of the second pulse is measured. In micro or nanoscale systems such as open tubular liquid chromatography or capillary electrophoresis that use small diameter capillaries, it is not practical to make measurement in a separate cell external to the separation system due to excessive dispersion from connecting tubing, etc. The measurement must be made directly on the capillary. Although fine wire electrode in galvanic contact with the solution inserted through holes drilled through the capillary walls have been demonstrated, a more elegant, generally applicable solution is capacitively coupled contactless conductivity detection. In short, it is called C4D, capital letter C, superscript 4, capital letter D. In this technique, a pair of ring-shaped electrons is put on the separation measurement capillary around 1 mm apart. An excitation voltage, typically with a frequency of several hundred kilohertz, is applied to one electrode. This frequency is sufficiently high to penetrate through the capillary wall to the solution inside. There are many different approaches to measure the conductance. In the simplest approach, a current to voltage converter is connected between the second electrode and ground. The resulting signal is rectified and is directly proportional to the solution conductance. Another class of quasi-universal detector relies on the measurement of aerosol particles. This technique is applicable to all non-volatile solutes that form aerosol particles when the column effluent is nebulized with the help of a dry particle-free gas. Obviously, volatile solutes that leave no residue cannot be detected by such methods. The oldest and the most widely used detector of this type is the evaporative light scattering detector. In short, it is called ELSD, all in capital letters. These ELSD detectors is offered by a number of manufacturers. The first stage of all aerosol detectors are largely the same as the nebulizer used in atomic spectroscopy, except that an effort is made to keep the flow through liquid passage streamlined and of minimum volume to minimize dispersion. Minute particles form from residual non-volatile analytes in the effluent. The aerosol bearing gas stream pass through a focused light beam, commonly from a diode laser, perpendicular to the gas flow direction. The light scattered by the particles is then registered on a photodiode placed at right angles to the light beam as well as the direction of flow. The aerosol charge detector, which in short is called ACD, it was introduced by Roy Dixon of California State University. It has become popular among these genres of detector because of its greater sensitivity and greater uniformity of response among various analytes compared to the ELSD. In the ACD detector, the aerosol streams passes through a corona discharge. The particles acquire charge in proportion to their size. The gas molecules are not charged, much like various ionization detectors used in gas chromatography. The charged particles are then detected and the total charge carried by them measured in a continuous manner. Thank you. Now I'll discuss about the condensation nucleation light scattering detector. In short, it is called CNLSD detector. In this device, super saturated water vapor is allowed to condense on the aerosol particles, making them grow prior to measuring light scattering. This allows more sensitive measurements compared to the ELSD detector, while achieving fast response and relatively low baseline noise. Aerosol detectors are popular in the pharmaceutical industry, where both trace and measure constituents in a formulation are of interest and the analytes are largely non-volatile. Over a large concentration range, the intrinsic response of these detectors is not linear. Rather, the baseline corrected response, Y, is a power function of the concentration of C. Y is equal to K C to the power N, where the in capital letters Y is the baseline corrected response, small k is a proportionality constant, and capital letter C is the concentration, and small letter N is typically slightly less than 1. The response appears linear over a limited range of concentration, but at higher concentration, the response slope becomes smaller than that at lower concentrations. To linearize the response behavior, often the detector signal is raised to the power denoted by M in small letter, where ideally M is equal to 1 by N, and the processed signal, that means Y to the power M, is output to the external world. The response behavior does not, however, completely correspond to this equation. As a result, the linearization is often far from perfect. From the beginning days of HPLC, the most commonly used detection mode has been UV absorbance measurement. In early years, a fixed wavelength absorbance detector that utilized an mercury lamp emitting at 254 nanometer and equipped with a band pass filter that allowed the transmission of only this line was much used, especially with the advent of near monochromatic LEDs with emission wavelengths into deep UV. It will be even easier today to fabricate such dedicated single wavelength detectors with high performance, and they will be useful in niche applications. In practice, all HPLC systems are presently sold with variable wavelength UV visible absorbance detector. The simplest of these detectors requires manual selection of wavelength, and the absorbance at a single wavelength is monitored. At the other extreme, the photodiode array, that means PDA detectors, also called the diode array detector, that means DAD detector, PDA and DAD detector, both are same. It can monitor a large range of wavelengths, even the entire spectrum, on a near continuous basis. Photodiode array spectrometers have been discussed already in the chapter number 16. The UPLC detector versions is equipped with an appropriate flow cell and optimized for fast data throughput. Because of its versatility, the PDA is presently the most used HPLC detector. The cell design in UV visible absorption measurement is important and depends in parts on the scale. For capillary scale measurements, only direct on capillary measurements are possible to avoid dispersion. The typical capillary detection arrangement involves just a radial pass. A focused beam is passed through a small window, that means around 1 millimeter long, in the capillary, where a portion of the protective sheath is removed and the transmitted light is detected. The use of a ball lens and or a optical fiber for coupling to the capillary is common. The radial path length is the same as the inner diameter of the capillary and is very small. Multiple reflections in an extremely mirrored capillary where the beam enters at an angle and exit after multiple reflection has been advocated but is not in common practice. Capillaries containing a bubble are available from one manufacturer. Bubble means where the capillary is expanded to a larger diameter and detection is made. In some sources, it is possible to connect an external jet path capillary cell with a path length greater than or equal to 1 millimeter. Regarding this jet path, more discussion is in this book. If you are interested, please go through this book, Antel Chemistry, written by the G.D. Christians. Now I'll discuss about the liquid core waveguide, LCW. The liquid core waveguide or LCW based cells are finding increased use in HPLC. Light loss in all cells is exponential with the cell path length and dramatically increased with decreasing inner diameter of the cell. Long path length, very narrow bore conventional cells are impractical as very little light reaches the detector and this becomes the primary determinant of detector noise. The principles of LCW operation has been previously discussed in the chapter number 16. The light loss per unit length of an LCW is much less than that of a standard cylindrical tube of the same inner diameter. As such, narrow bore long path cells becomes practical. Teflon AF itself can also be used as a waveguide, but it is highly gas permeable and this is generally not desirable. One ingenious deliberate use of this permeability is the simultaneous use of a Teflon AS tube both as an optical absorbance cells and a post column reactor. This arrangement is mentioned as figure in this book. The device was used to measure various nitrophenols in rain and ambient air. Nitrophenol behave as acid-base indicators as that are yellow in basic solution. That means absorbed as around 400 nanometer. Because the separation was conducted on a C18 silica column that could not be used at high pH, then the gaseous ammonia was directly introduced through the walls of the Teflon AF tube to increase the pH and permit long path detection. The fluorescence detectors are among the most sensitive detectors used in HPLC. A small minority of compounds exhibits native fluorescence, and thus this is a rather selective mode of detection. However, it is also common to derivatize specific class of compounds either before separation or in a post-column fashion after separation. A spectrophotometric detector uses both excitation and emission monochromators. A broad band xenon lamps or a xenon flash lamps is used as the source. The xenon flash lamps provides greater light intensity and somewhat better signal to noise ratio. For dedicated applications, a combination of specialized lamp source, excitation bands pass filter and emission long pass filter can provide excellent performance at low cost. Some detectors use an excitation monochromator but a long pass filter on the emission side. The signal to noise ratio for a fluorescence detector is typically specified in terms of the Raman emission of water when excited at 350 nanometer. The energy loss is 3382 cm inverse, thus the emission occurs at 397 nanometer. Since pure water is easily available and the weak Raman band mimics weak fluorescence, this is an easy parameter to measure. The typical signal-to-noise ratio for the Raman band of water is 300 to 550 for 1 to 1.5 second integration time in a typical HPLC type fluorescence detector, compared to greater than 10,000 for a state-of-the-art benchtop spectrofluorimeter. When a number of compounds are to be determined, it is often possible to find a wavelength, usually in the deep UV, where all the analytes of interest can be excited. But they fluoresce at different wavelengths. Some detectors allow the simultaneous monitoring of up to four different emission wavelengths. This is very useful in such case and provides another dimension of selectivity. Some detectors allow not only excitation and emission scanning but also synchronous scanning, in which the excitation and emission monochromators are simultaneously scanned, providing several dimensions for selectivity. Some programmable detectors permit different excitation and emission wavelengths at different times so that each analyte can be optimally detected. For a compound that has a good quantum efficiency, the limits of detection in a low sub-femtogram range are attainable. For capillary scale fluorescence detection, a laser source is ideal as it can be focused into a small, very small spot, and because it provides very high fluence, that means very high light intensity per unit area. A confocal arrangement is popular. Collimated laser light is incident on a dichroic mirror and is reflected and focused by a microscope objective to the window made on the detection capillary. The emitted fluorescence passes through the dichroic mirrors, a band pass filter to reject any residual laser light, and then focus through a spatial filter to a detector. A capillary separation using confocal laser induced fluorescence detection. In short, the laser induced fluorescence is called LIF. Another, we already discussed about the LCW based fluorescence. The LCW based fluorescence detector can be uniquely simple and powerful. The general arrangement you can find in a figure in this book. I'll talk about the another detector, chiral detectors. The chiral detectors offer unique information in chiral chromatography. Chiral compounds rotate plain polarized light. The direction of optical rotation identifies an isomer. The degree of rotation is dependent on both the concentration of a chiral compound and its specific rotation, as defined by the Biot's law. Alpha lambda t is equal to a lambda to the power square t by CL. Alpha lambda t means we can write in such a way that third bracket alpha, third bracket close, subscript lambda, superscript capital T. Where this value is the specific rotation and temperature T and wavelength lambda, and the small letters L is the optical path length in decimeter, and alpha is the observed optical rotation, and small letter C is the concentration in gram per milliliter. In a polarimetric detector, the signal strength depends on the specific rotation of the molecule, not its absorption characteristics. Polarimetric detectors typically use a red diode laser, which is around 670 nanometer its wavelength, or an LED at 400 to 450 nanometer as the light source. Another equation is the Drude equation. It is mentioned in this book. I'll describe the applicability of this equation. The Drude equation describes the dependence of rotational strength of optically active molecule on the wavelength of light in the absence of chromophores or in spectral regions that are distant from absorption bands. This equation also points out that the degree of rotation as a function of wavelength increased with decreasing wavelength. Lower probe wavelength does yield higher response. However, at lower wavelength, right and left-handed circular polarized light propagates at different velocities and are not absorbed by molecules to the same extent. And this is called the circular dichroism. In short, it is the CD. When CD is present, it causes a deviation from Drude equation known as the Cotton effect. Specific rotation is maximized and Cotton effect is minimized in the range of 400 to 460 nanometer. The use of a 430 nanometer light source optimized these effects. Now I'll elaborate little bit about the CD detector. The signal from a CD detector is the difference between the absorbance measured with right and left circularly polarized light, and it is often a very small value. Like UV absorbance, the CD signal is wavelength dependent. A chiral molecule should have absorption in the 200 to 420 nanometer range to have a strong CD signal. A typical CD detector have a wavelength range of 220 to 420 nanometer. A noise level of 30 mu 0 and a drift of 50 mu 0 per hour. Both CD and UV absorbance output are available from a CD detector, but the UV detector performance is generally substantially below that of a standard UV detector. The coulometric and the amperometric detector. These are highly selective and sensitive electrochemical detectors, which I already discussed in the chapter number 15. And these detectors can detect substances that readily undergo redox conversion, or substances that form a product with an ion derived from electrode oxidation. As for example, the amino acids may form a chelate with silver ion derived from a silver electrode. The cell design typically involves a thin layer cell or a wall jet cell. Thin layer cell is for the solution flows between closely spaced planar electrodes, and for the wall jet cells, the solution impings on the working electrode. Coulometry differs from amperometry in that the analyte is quantitatively converted in a coulometric detector. If the electron stoichiometry of the reaction is known, then coulometry can be used for absolute quantitation without reference to any calibration. If the redox process in a coulometric detector produces a product that has a noble detection property, following the coulometry detector with another detector provides substantial new information. Another detector, pulsed amperometric detection, in short it is called PAD in capital letters. This pulse amperometric detection system introduced by the Dennis Johnson largely solved this problem by cleaning and renewing the electrode surface in a near continuous fashion. The PAD involves the application of various potential to a working electrode over a specific time period, usually well below 1 second, that is continuously repeated. The carbohydrates, for example, contain the OH groups that are easily oxidized at a specific potential on a gold electrode and results in a current that is measured, ensuring selective and sensitive detection. After oxidation, a reduction and reoxidation step is applied to remove the bound analyte and renew the electrode surface. The waveform is typically repeated at frequencies greater than 1 Hz, each step lasting a few hundred milliseconds, thus allowing chromatographic data points to be recorded at least every second. Pico and femtomole sensitivity can be achieved with PAD, this detector, making it one of the most sensitive detection techniques. Only a small portion of the sample is oxidized, so the rest can be collected if desired for further analysis. Considering that carbohydrates absorb light very poorly, there are not many other options to detect them selectively and sensitively. The chemiluminescence detector, in short it is called CL detector. It can be considered as post-Coulomb reaction type detector because one or more reagent must be added to the Coulomb effluent before detection. Flow-through chemiluminescence detector are discussed in the chapter number 16. Most CL reaction, chemiluminescence reactions are very rapid. CL detection is adaptable to the microchip scale. For example, given in a figure mentioned in this book. Now, the radioactivity detector. It is another specialized detector that is used to detect radio labeled analytes. In one design, the flow cell is positioned between the photocathodes of two highly sensitive photomultiplied tubes operating in coincidence counting is of the type it distinguished from random noise in each PMT by only recognizing a real count when both PMTs registered a count simultaneously. Now I'll talk about the post reaction detection. In short, is PCR reactions. In post Coulomb reactions detection, a chemical reaction occurs before detection. Although most commonly a reagent is introduced, the analyte conversion can take place without the physical addition of a reagent but brought about by UV irradiation or just heating. Conversion can also be carried out by passing through a solid reactor, as for example an immobilized enzyme or an ion exchange column. Indeed, as we will shortly see, the suppression in conductivity ions chromatography is an example of a unique PCR detection methods. There are many examples about the PCR method mentioned in this book.